This podcast contains mature themes and situations. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Mer Lafferty of I Should Be Writing and the Heaven Patio Book, and you are listening to Episode 8 of Murder at Evadon Hill with P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Evadon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and performed by P.G. Holyfield. Welcome back, everybody. No real intro today. Just want to thank my guest voices for this week. First, we have Chris Miller, reading the part of Lord Evadon. Once again, we have John Stallard, the vicar from Geek Label Radio, reading the part of Head Constable Lewis. And briefly at the end of this episode, we have KJ Johnson from the Roundtable and Volcanicast podcasts, reading the part of Constable Ulrich. I also want to thank Mer Lafferty from the Parsec-winning I Should Be Writing podcast and Heaven podcast novel series for her intro. Also, stay tuned at the end of this episode for a couple new promos, one from Seth Harwood and also one from Christiane Ellis and her new secret project. Stay tuned for that. But now, for the story so far. In Episode 7, our heroes finally gain their audience with Lord Evadon. Only after Aramis manages to anger everyone around him does Lord Evadon come to the realization that Aramis Cragan may be his best hope of discovering who has murdered Greta Platt. The episode ends with Lord Evadon sending Aramis and Aaron to the scene of Greta's murder, the Evadon Manor Courtyard. Chapter 8. The Courtyard. The Icon of Iberian, Child of Prophecy.
Do you plan on beating them over the head with your book?
Theroic, if they get past my men and my mace, then yes.
Iberian and Theroic Ironblade before the battle at Ulm. Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertee approached a set of double doors. Through the glass panes of the door, they made out an open courtyard with walls that extended upward out of sight. Aaron quickly realized the manor's courtyard had been built into the center of the manor.
Odd. From the outside, it appeared that the front of the mansion is the opening to the Oviarn Pass. Yet if my sense of direction is correct, this courtyard is in the center of the manor. That doesn't seem possible.
The monk smiled. Very attentive, Aaron. If recollection serves, the pass angles downward immediately after entry, and the tunnel then works its way northeast through the mountains. I believe the courtyard rests directly on top of the pass, or at least partially. Aaron was having trouble visualizing the tunnel, but he trusted his teacher's words. They proceeded through the doors into the courtyard. Immediately, they were both struck by the seamlessness of the area. The landscape, vegetation, and architecture were such that the outer walls and windows of the courtyard were mostly hidden.
This is incredible. If I didn't know better, I would think I was outside in one of the gardens at Liza's Choice.
Aramis allowed himself a moment to reflect on the famous gardens of Liza's Choice, planted on the most memorable battleground of what was historically called the War of Man.
500 years ago, Ohm had been the largest city in the province of Yu. During the War of Man, demon spawn and humanoid creatures called the Torim entered Cairn through a great rift and portal connecting Cairn to what was only known as the Outworld. The monsters attacked through Inara into Yu, quickly moving south. Cities fell, and people fled ahead of the army's advance, gathering at Ohm. Throic Ironblade, general of all the armies of Yu, decided that humanity's last stand would be made at Ohm. Throic held Ohm against the threat for 3 weeks, driving back wave after wave of the Torim. But on the day that Ohm would have surely fallen, Alicia Llewellyn, queen of the elves, attacked with long-forgotten magics and a small army of elves, dwarves, and gnomes. Against the wishes of most of the hidden and silent old races, Queen Alicia decided to help humanity, and her efforts helped turn the tide of the war. In her honor, Ohm changed its name to Liza's Choice, and the final battlefield of the war now held the grandest gardens in all the land. But Aramis felt Aaron had captured the essence of the illusion very well. The architecture and 3 centuries of plant growth masked the walls of the courtyard well. One could easily forget he or she remained inside the walls of Avedon Manor.
A perfect place for Greta Platt to escape the troubles of the day. So beautiful, so inspiring. Also a fine place for someone to catch her defenseless and end her life.
As Head Constable Lewis finished speaking, he stepped out from behind a grouping of trees. Aramis approached Constable Lewis.
I see you convinced Lord Avedon to keep you around. I don't know how you did it, but as always, I accept his decisions, no matter how questionable they may be.
You listened to our conversation with Lord Avedon.
Of course. How else could I have gotten to the courtyard before the two of you?
Aramis pulled his hands from his sleeves and held them out in a supplicating manner. Constable, I know I am threatening your position here in Avedon Hill, but my only desire is to find out who murdered this young woman and gain access to the Olvearan Pass. I hope you are able to work with us. I assure you, we can help each other. The head constable shook his head from side to side.
You are an amazing person, Cragen. You have the ability to disarm people just through conversation. I'm sure it has to do with your monastic training. It seems you always get whatever you want in the end.
Aaron spoke up. Most of the time, anyway. Aramis lowered his hands to his side, although not usually when dealing with the impetuousness of youth. If you say so, sir.
Can you truth read, Sir Aramis?
Constable Lewis's question caught Aramis Cragen off guard. Somewhat. Aaronic advisors develop different gifts during their training. I can sense emotions in many and recognize certain things in people when they are trying to deceive me. But I am not as gifted in truth reading as many in my order.
So what are your strongest gifts, Sir Aramis?
Aramis smiled. Possibly a topic of discussion for a later date, Constable Lewis. Aramis looked around. Where was Greta's body found? Constable Lewis led Aramis over to an intricately detailed stone bench. There was a small spot of dried blood on the seat of the bench. On the ground in front of the bench, there was another small area of dried blood, slightly larger than the first. Like you said before, not enough blood. Could some sort of blow have caused her death? Did she have any broken bones? Lewis shook his head again from side to side.
There were 2 small punctures on her neck, and some bruising around the wounds. She had no broken bones, and when she was buried, she had more bruises on her face and arms. As far as we could tell, most of the blood had been drained from Greta's body. If she bled out, and the cuts on her neck certainly could have allowed for that type of blood loss, there should have been a little more blood around her body or on her clothing.
And there was not. I mean, on her clothing.
No, Sir Aramis. A small stain on the dress she was wearing, but no more than you see there on the ground.
And how do you feel about the idea of a vampire killing Greta Platt? Constable Lewis shrugged.
I've never seen a vampire. I know they're supposed to exist, but I just don't consider it a reality until I see proof. The marks could have been made by teeth, I guess, but this courtyard's not exactly an easy location to get to. My guess is someone with access to the manor got into the courtyard, killed her, and then made it look like a vampire attack.
Aramis Cragen crouched, and looked closely over the area where the body was found.
Well, I can tell you vampires exist, but the ones I have seen were little more than walking dead. Certainly not capable of devising some sort of plan that would get them here, kill Greta, leave little in the way of evidence, and then escape. Although I have heard the tales of vampire masters that can walk among the living with ease.
Can you not recognize these vampire masters by sight? Aramis shrugged.
Vampire masters are supposed to be sensitive to sunlight, but are not damaged by it. And then there is their smell.
Smell?
I should rephrase. Their lack of smell. Supposedly, they emit no odor. But I won't know for sure until I happen to meet one.
Aramis thought for a moment.
Is there any one town that primarily stays indoors during the day?
Sir Aramis, this is a town of mining families. Even if these mountains haven't been actively mined in 3 generations, I believe that fear is the only reason the inhabitants of Abaddon Hill didn't move into the caves of Mount Olviar centuries ago.
Are the mountains dangerous?
No, I meant the fear over being confused with the dwarf clan that lived here thousands of years before our arrival.
The constable smiled at his joke while Aaron rolled his eyes.
To answer your question, only a few in our town would be called outdoor types. There are some, like Kel and Lon Garrett, the town's farrier, and then there are the farmers on the outskirts of town.
What about the children in town?
Of the Abaddon children, John is the most active outdoors. He's a great horseman, even at 14. Shane Olivet works at the stables with Lon Garrett. Jelly Hemming is the baker's daughter. She spends a lot of time outside. Greta loved being outdoors herself. She'd go horseback riding outside of town 2 or 3 days a week. Some of the farmers have children, but most of these families rarely venture into town proper unless delivering produce or picking up supplies. All of these families have been cleared, by the way. There was a party the night Greta was killed, end of the harvest season, great bonfire, the blessings of Arjun to get through the winter months and all that. The men and women from the farms were all accounted for that night.
Aramis looked around the bench for anything else of interest. Lord Avedon said that nothing had been moved in the courtyard. Is that the case?
As far as I know, and it hasn't made Kel very happy, that's for sure.
Who found her? Kel?
Aramis pulled out the book he'd been writing in earlier that day and began taking notes. Who is Kel, by the way?
What is that?
Lewis pointed at the pen Aramis was using to write in his book.
I do not own many things, but this is special to me. You see, this glass ball here holds ink.
The pen disperses drops of ink through a tube to the nib, but only when I press it to the paper.
No bottle? No dipping?
I can write for hours without having to refill this glass ball.
That's quite the tool, Sir Aramis.
Lewis discerned that Aramis was waiting for an answer to his question.
I'm sorry. Kel is the gardener and groundskeeper here. Lord Avedon has forbidden him to even water the flowers until we find Greta's killer.
And? Lewis finally tore his eyes from Aramis's pen.
Lord Avedon found Greta's body.
Lord Avedon?
Yes. He said he was looking for Greta to ask her about something and came here to find her. She came here most evenings, so that makes sense. When he entered the courtyard, he says he found her on the ground by the bench. He called out for the guards. Constable Ulrich was on duty in the manor that evening. He was in the grand hall, eating at the table of honor at the time. When Ulrich arrived, Lord Avedon was sitting on the ground, here.
Lewis indicated an area just to the left of where the body had rested.
Lord Avedon was holding Greta's right hand, crying. The bite marks were on the left side of Greta's neck.
So, who was the last person to see her alive? Aramis was now edging around the stone bench in circles as he asked a question, looking closely at the ground for any signs of evidence.
Killer, I would guess.
The monk smiled at the wordplay. Very good, Lewis. But you know what I mean.
Yes, of course. She met with Lord Avedon just before sundown. Both Ali Moore and Brianna Ray saw her after that time in different areas of the manor.
And they are?
The 2 maids at the manor. No one admits seeing her after that.
And how long after the last maid saw Greta was her body found?
Almost 2 bells.
Aramis thought for a moment. That reminds me, I have not heard a clock ring or a temple bell since our arrival.
Another of Lord Avedon's restrictions. The temple to Aj has a wonderful set of bells, but they will not be rung until Lord Avedon ends his grieving.
Did Greta have any appointments scheduled that evening? Lewis moved away from the bench and led them a few feet until they stood next to an ornate birdbath.
Funny you should ask that.
He reached into a pocket and pulled out a leather pouch.
The pouch is mine. I just used it to keep what is inside a little safer.
Aramis Cragan opened the pouch and carefully pulled out a piece of paper. It was very thin, thinner than any paper Aramis had ever used himself. He wondered how many pages of this paper he could fit into a bound volume. It was only a part of a page, however, around the size of Aramis's hand. Its jagged edges indicated it was part of something larger. This may have only been the corner of a page. There was writing on the paper. Since it was all on a piece torn from a larger page, some words were missing. I have to meet with H.A. Know what this is about, and I really do not have right now. H.A. Aaron was reading the paper over Aramis's shoulder.
No one in town has the initials H.A., but if this indicates a meeting with someone the evening she died, then this person might be our killer.
Aramis placed the scrap of paper back into the leather pouch.
I'm going to keep this with me, if you don't mind.
Lewis nodded. Is this paper from a diary of some sort?
Greta kept a schedule book, along with many other accounting journals and such. I found many books in her office, but none with paper like that, or any that would be considered a journal.
Constable Lewis led them further away from the bench to a flower bed that lined one of the walls of the courtyard.
You can look at Greta's office when you have time. There's plenty to read there, if you so desire.
Well, if Greta had her journal with her when she was attacked, I guess the killer must have taken it with him, or her. The paper you found must have been ripped from the book? Constable Lewis nodded.
My thoughts as well. I'm sure that book's been destroyed by now, if the killer thought it might implicate him. Here's another item of possible interest found in the courtyard.
Lewis bent over and retrieved a small piece of metal from the edge of the flower bed. He handed it to Aramis. It was curved and was the length of Aramis's hand. One end of the metal piece had been sharpened to a point. The other end appeared as if it had been broken off of something larger. The metal piece was dirty, except at the unsharpened end. No blood on it.
No, but if it was part of something else, it's just that the holes in Greta's neck could have been made by the pointed end of a piece of metal like this.
Aramis smiled. Interesting. It is certainly worth exploring, especially when we examine Greta's body. Aramis and Aaron spent a good deal of time walking around the courtyard. There were several areas where footprints were visible in large numbers, but the courtyard was a popular place for visitors and household alike, not including the many people that walked around the site once Greta's body had been discovered. Aaron wandered into one corner of the garden and came across a small metal grate. Grass covered the edges of the grate, but it was not hidden. Rust covered the iron bars. It appeared that it had not been opened for years. The grate had no handle, so Aaron grasped one of the bars near the edge closest to him and pulled, but the cover did not budge. Constable Lewis approached as Aaron attempted to look beyond the metal frame.
That leads down to Olviarin Pass. At one time it was used by workers, but as you can see, it's been locked for years, probably a century or more. If the story is correct, some people began using this worker's entrance to bypass payment for usage of the pass, so it was permanently closed.
What about secret doors, secret passages? Aaron Pertee had grown up at Castle Penn, one of the oldest and largest castles in all of Cairn, and was well-versed with how most aristocratic homes were designed. Are these four doors the only access to the courtyard?
Unless someone figured out how to get onto the roof of the manor without being seen.
Aaron looked up and saw that one could lower a rope rather easily from the open roof. Lewis continued.
But it would be nearly impossible for someone to get out to the roof from the outside. If they got past the manor gates, the only access to the roof would be from the front of the manor, which is always lit and patrolled. As for secret passages...
Lewis smiled.
Yeah, the manor has its secrets, as do most estates of this size, but Lord Avedon would have to be the one to share that information with you.
At that time, Lord Avedon walked through the same doors that Aramis and Aaron had used to enter the courtyard. Constable Ulrich accompanied Lord Avedon as well. The five men met at the bench where Greta's body had been discovered.
Sir Aramis, did you have any questions for me?
Lord Avedon moved as he spoke, an uncomfortable look on his face.
No, Lord Avedon, not at this time. Head Constable Lewis has been most helpful.
Good, good. I sent word to Gloria Platt, Greta's mother. She is at Greta's mausoleum as we speak. She's been there most of the day, I believe, praying over her daughter's soul. I believe Kel is there as well, keeping her company.
Aramis looked at his notes. The gardener?
Yes. Keller's the groundskeeper of the manor.
So Greta was not buried in the cemetery we passed on the way to the manor. Constable Ulrich had a strained look on his face as if Aaron had spoken blasphemy. But Lord Avedon was nonplussed.
No, our family has had its own family cemetery, underground at the end of a set of catacombs built generations ago by my family. The Platts, though not of our bloodline, have always been considered a part of the Avedon family. Many of the former housemistresses have chosen to be buried in the Platt Mausoleum, even the ones that have retired and moved away from Avedon Hill.
Of course, sir. Lord Avedon turned to Constable Ulrich.
Ulrich will take you through the catacombs. I would send you without escort, but people have been known to lose their way.
Lord Avedon turned to leave, but paused when he saw Aramis's notebook.
I see you take notes. I like that. When you find out who perpetrated this abomination, I expect you to turn your notes over to me. I would not want to execute someone in error, Sir Aramis.
It was the first time Lord Avedon had spoken of retribution. Lord Avedon left the courtyard, and Constable Lewis began to leave as well, but Aramis Cragan pulled him aside, out of earshot of the others. Lewis, you know I have to ask the question.
Ah, I was just beginning to like you, so ask it.
What were you doing the night Greta Platt was murdered? Lewis paused before he answered.
I apologize, Sir Aramis, but I will not share that with you. All I will say is that I was indisposed that night. I was in town, but I was far from the manor during the time frame that you were concerned with. You'll just have to trust me on this.
Aramis Cragan watched Constable Lewis intently while he had answered the question. He did not sense that the head constable was lying, but there was great unease behind his evasiveness. For now, I guess that will have to do. We will speak more, I'm sure. I plan on leveraging your knowledge of the townspeople where possible.
Oh, I'll be at the manor or at the town's garrison if you need me, Sir Aramis. Lord Avedon has seen fit to release me from standing watch at the manor gates.
Head Constable Lewis bowed and left the courtyard. Constable Ulrich indicated a door on the wall opposite to where Aramis and Aaron had entered the courtyard. He spoke to Aramis, ignoring Aaron completely.
Are you ready, sir?
Aramis nodded. Yes, I believe so. Let us go meet the grieving mother. Aramis Cragan looked at his notes once more. Who is this H.A.? Could a vampire master hide him or herself in a town without being discovered? And what was Greta's true role here at the manor? House mistress. It seems such an ill-fitting title.
Sigler wants to kill you. You could be a victim in Scott's newest horror thriller, Nocturnal, which launches at midnight Eastern Standard Time on October 31st. That's right, bitches. At the stroke of midnight on Halloween. So, you wanna die? Register a profile now at scottsigler.com to win a chance to hear your name as a corpse. Fill in all the fields and don't forget your picture, because Scott wouldn't want to kill the wrong person. Then he'd just have to kill you all.
Hello, I'm Christiana Ellis. What's all this about the Sound of Awesome, you may ask? Well, I'll tell you. It's all about synergizing the energy.
Sound of my voice. I need your help. My name is Princess Trelawna from the frontier planet of Maltani. For centuries we have lived in peace until now, led by a vicious band of interstellar criminals. An insurrection has been spawned, and my father, the rightful ruler of our world, has been deposed and murdered. I myself only just managed to escape with the help of Stefan, my father's most trusted advisor. We are now on the run. But all is not lost. Though the insurrection leaders have taken our capital, they have not yet discovered my father's secret accounts. We must access these funds, equivalent to 10 million credits, if we are to amass the forces necessary to retake our homeworld. Alas, these criminals have flagged all transactions from the royal family, so our only hope is to transfer the funds to the account of an off-worlder. An off-worlder like you. I need your help, and we are prepared to offer you 10% of the total amount for your cooperation in this matter. Please reply to me at the Intergalactic Communications Web at www.spacecasey.com. You're our only hope.
And so you can see, the peanut butter is always important. Thank you for listening.
You first met Jack Palms last summer in the world's first noir crime podcast novel, Jack Wakes Up.
It's a cold world and this is life.
And now Seth Harwood is bringing him back. Yes, Jack Palms is back on the scene to shake it down in Jack Palms 2, This Is Life.
It's a cold world and this is life.
Available at SethHarwood.com. And if you haven't heard it already, check out the smash hit podcast, Jack Wakes Up, before it comes out in print on March 16th, Palm Sunday, 2008. SethHarwood.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and performed by the author. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin McLeod through Incompetech.com. This podcast is copyright 2007. P.G. Holyfield, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license.